A few hours earlier, at 1 in the morning, Bill Nellist and the other Alamo scouts who had stayed back in Platero to guard Dr. Fisher decided they must evacuate the barrio. Their safety was in jeopardy. Reports from the guerrillas indicated that the Japanese were active again along Highway 5. It was only a matter of time before the garrison in Cabanatuan City would discover that the phone lines to the camp had been severed and that something was amiss. Pajota's forces had completed their withdrawal to the Pampanga River. By their admittedly vague estimates drawn from the dim visibility of the night, they had eliminated over half of the Japanese battalion camped along the river. Pajota had secured a remarkable victory, but now he fully expected that the Japanese would regroup and attempt to retaliate. The scouts had to devise a suitable way to convey Dr. Fisher to Balinkarin, the next barrio to the north. An ordinary stretcher wouldn't suffice. In his present state, his body couldn't withstand the violent torquing and swaying of a crude litter. So they improvised a solution. From one of the fancier dwellings in Platero, they removed a thick Spanish door from its hinges and hauled it over to the school. Gingerly, they slid Dr. Fisher onto the ponderous slab. It required 6 strong men to carry the semi-conscious captain on his stretcher of wood. Glancing nervously over their shoulders for enemy sorties, the bearers disappeared down the Carabao path toward Balinkarin, some 3 miles away. "I don't think anybody thought he was going to make it," said Ranger Thomas Grace, who was one of Fisher's 6 litter carriers. "You could look at him and tell. But we couldn't just leave him behind to die." Lying on the door, with his sallow face turned toward the stars, Fisher survived the hour-long journey to Balinkarin, but just barely. Fisher was placed on a cot in one of the stilted nipa huts. If Fisher was to be saved, he absolutely required the facilities and expertise of a fully equipped army hospital. By radio, a request for a small airplane was called into army headquarters in Gimba. The request was granted. A plane would fly to Balinkarin in the morning to evacuate Fisher. There was a glaring problem, however. Balinkarin had no airstrip. With the naive audacity peculiar to his outfit, Bill Nellist ordered his Alamo scouts to go build one, overnight. Quickly, they went canvassing from door to door and assembled a crew of local people. By torchlight, they selected a suitable swath of land on the barrio outskirts. For 5 hours, as darkness segued into dawn, the workmen stooped in the rice fields with hoes, rakes, even wooden spoons. They graded and leveled, tore down the paddy dikes, and pulled away vegetation. "I'd never seen anything like it," recalled Alamo scout Gilbert Cox. "Not once did they stop to take a rest. Every man, woman, and child was out there all night clawing in the dirt. Some of them were using their bare hands." By dawn, the airstrip was complete. It was crude, bumpy, and short, but the tiny Piper Cubs didn't require much distance on which to land and take off. The scouts marked the perimeters with bedsheets, so the pilot could plainly spot it from the air. Utterly exhausted, Bill Nellist fell asleep in his clothes, with ears tuned to the skies. The airplane never came. In the forenoon, Captain Fisher roused for a brief moment. With glazed, uncomprehending eyes, he glanced over at his friend and First Sergeant John Nelson, who was at his side. Fisher's expression was opaque, his voice thin and whispery.
"Good luck," he said, struggling to muster a smile.
"What, Jimmy?"
"Good luck on the way out," he said. And then his eyes closed. An hour later, he died. The body was carefully wrapped in canvas. With several hundred Filipinos in attendance, the Alamo scouts buried James Canfield Fisher at the base of a fruit tree at the edge of Balinkarin.